On Ben Hook here. Before we get into the show, we want to share with you the incredible story of Dave Meadows and his Smoke and Soul barbecue project. Dave has a passion for low and slow barbecue cooking, but an even greater passion for feeding the homeless with his incredible slow cook delights. Now, Dave is about to take his barbecue trailer around Australia, feeding the homeless, making 19 stops in four states over 6 weeks, and he has a unique item he would love you to bid for. Ash's hero, Travis Head's own cricket bat. Now, Dave works as a groundsman at Royal Adelaide when he's not cooking barbies, and that's where he met Travis, who agreed to support the cause by donating one of his match bats, which he has personally signed. You can bid for it via www.32auctions.com/smokeandsoul. We'll have the link in our show notes, as well as the link to support Dave and his work more broadly. He has a great cookbook too, Meat Life Crisis. If you want to support Dave Meadows, go to davemeadowsbarbecue.com.
Welcome to the golf edition of Hooked on Sport. This is South Australia's Summer Golf Wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define golf across South Australia and beyond. It's time to talk golf with sports commentator Ben Hook and state golf representative Sophie Hilditch.
Good on you, Wallace. Thank you. Sophie, hello. Happy golfing. How are you striking them?
Yeah, look, I've actually just had a lesson recently because we have a big Hooked on Sport, I reckon it's a scrambles match, but you're actually leaving me hanging. I don't know what's quite happening on Friday down at Glenelg, but I'm looking forward to it. So I've had a lesson because last time I played with you, my golf swing was atrocious, so I needed to work on it.
Your responsibility on Friday is to turn up at Glenelg Golf Club, make a heck of a lot of putts, and make sure that we lift the trophy at the end. Yeah, we're off to play the Glenelg Golf Club Foundation Day. Normally the Foundation Day is full of kids, except all the kids are playing in the Junior Masters at Royal Adelaide, so it'll be an adults-only affair. You and I might have a chat with Rob Vincikovic, the general manager of the Glenelg Golf Club. Looking forward to it because we are right at the back end of all of their renovations. It's complete. The course is ready to go. We're going to get an exclusive look at it. We'll have a long conversation with him over the course of 18 holes. I'm not convinced on his golf, and I'm not convinced on my golf, and I'm not convinced on Wallace's golf either. But you, Sophie, will be team captain and expected to absolutely dominate and lead us to the trophy. No pressure.
Well, last scramble match, we actually, the team had a hole-in-one. So I'm looking for another team hole-in-one this time as well.
Yes, that team, there was one guy whose name I can't remember. There was Wayne Phillips. There was Sophie Hilditch. Those three did not have the hole-in-one. Someone did. But yes, a team hole-in-one. I'm happy for you to share it, Soph. You can share it with me. We'll both have our name on the, what did I win, a golf bag or something like that. I'll let you use it for a couple of months a year. How about that?
Oh, that would be brilliant. I was captain of the scramble team, so I think I get at least 3 months of the year with that golf bag.
So much golf to talk about today. We're going to spend some time talking about the Westlakes Golf Club as well, which will be a wonderful chat. Got a couple of mates who play at Westlakes who've been very helpful in sharing some information with me over the course of the last 24 hours. But before we get to all of that, Soph, I always love to hear, who is Sophie's star for this week?
Oh, well, Hookie, for me, this one was a no-brainer. I am going Steve Alderson. Well, most people will know him as Spud. He has just gone back-to-back at the All Abilities WebEx at Royal Fremantle. He is being a force to be reckoned with. I think it was back in 2024, he became the first autistic golfer ever to win on the G4D Tour in Spain, and it was unbelievable. He actually has always quite openly spoken about his autism and speaks beautifully about it. He was badly bullied, and he really credits golf to helping him with a lot of his mental health issues. And I think it's something to be celebrated that golf is a sport for everyone. And I think this is a completely beautiful story. Spud is a beautiful person. And he's also coached by Tammy Durton at the moment down at the Padawalunga, and she's also a gorgeous person. So, do you know what? It was just a gorgeous story, and it was a no-brainer for Sophie Starr.
Well done, Soph. It is absolutely perfect. And if you go online and you can find Steve Alderson's page, the great Spud, and his speech, having received that trophy, was absolutely immaculate. So if I can remember playing in mid-amateurs, when I don't think anyone had quite worked out that Spud had this autism challenge, and he was routinely bullied, even in that era, just through, you know, the ignorance of people in my demographic who didn't really understand what it was all about. And the easy thing was just to sort of not really be nasty, but just it was sort of unpleasant for him the whole way through. So the fact that he's come out of all of that and he's just turned into this wonderful human being, a great golfer in his own right, it's a wonderful story, Soph. Well done. Can I share with you Ben's best for the week?
Of course.
I've got a team, Soph, and I know this is a little bit out there and it doesn't really relate to golf, but I just want to commend the South Australian softball team, the Stars, who have just gone through the national championships again. So if you remember only a couple of weeks ago, the SA Stars winning the Softball Australian National Championships this time last year made our top 15 moments for South Australian sport for the year. They've gone so close in defending the title. In the end, they've gone down to New South Wales in the final, having defeated Victoria in the preliminary final earlier in the day. Look, New South Wales pitcher, Kendra Lane, I think her name is, absolutely lights out. She pitched I think she only conceded one hit in the entire match, so she was just absolutely dominant. But for South Australia to continue, I remember there was an era maybe 25 years ago where if you were playing softball for South Australia in South Australia, you couldn't get a game for Australia. You just weren't playing in a good enough local competition. And they've absolutely flipped that script, the South Australians. So to James Harris, as the CEO of softball in South Australia, and everyone involved in that program, congratulations to what you've done. They've won two titles in the last 4 years. They've only won three. Their first one was in the 1960s at Theberton. Then they won two in the last 3 years and went very close again this year. So very proud of our South Australian softball team. They're doing wonderful things. They do it on a shoestring budget, Soph, and they've been exceptional once again.
Now, I think this is the first team we've ever had as a Ben's Best or a Sophie Star, and I'm here for it. I will always allow South Australians to be celebrated no matter what sport they play on Hooked on Sport, regardless if we're talking about golf or cricket. So no complaints here.
What a relief. I was expecting the yellow card to come out, Soph. It's been a regular in my Ben's Best that you pull out the yellow card just to be extraordinarily critical, but they are extraordinarily good, the SA Stars. Well done to them once again. Hey, let's get into the show. Just a little bit of interesting tidbits around the place. Your mate, Caitlin Pearce, at Royal Adelaide, just a week or so ago, shot 12 under for the round. Can you even conjure that in your own mind? I mean, you're a very good player and I'm a dead set hacker. How does someone have 12 under in 18 holes? That's nuts.
I actually have no idea. And you forgot to mention as well, it was actually off the white tees, yes, which is traditionally the male members' tee. So it's also one of our longer courses. It was not quite the course proper. Our 17th hole, which is out of play at the moment. So it was a short 17th par three. But do you know what? That is incredible. I haven't seen the boys shoot that number, let alone a girl. She has just gone flames. She didn't have a single blemish on the scorecard either. That was 12 birdies and rounding out the round with six straight birdies in a row.
Yeah, I actually had a look. She birdied 1, 2, and 3, birdied 6, which is a par 5 for the women off the white tees, birdied 9, birdied 10, parred 11 and 12, and then birdied 13 through 18. Now, 13 is not a particularly easy hole. 14 is a tough hole off the white tees for the women. 16 is a very, very awkward par 3. And then just to finish it off with birdieing 18, that's just lights out, Soph.
Oh, it's incredible. I think the birdie on 16, I'm actually just ecstatic if I get my ball on that green, let alone birdie it.
Is there a green there? I've hit in that general direction occasionally, but I don't think I've ever actually been on a green on 16.
I have heard there's a green there. I think there's about a 5-meter landing zone on that green, and I've never hit it.
Let's turn our attention abroad, Soph. Brooks Koepka looks like he has made an application to return to the PGA Tour. What did you make of all of it?
Well, it's an interesting one. I actually think the PGA Tour is going to let him on, you know, Ben. I think it's a whole new group of people. Last time when they were doing all the suspensions for the year, it was a completely different board. I think they might be letting him on, but I reckon this is going to open up a lot of criticism and a lot of doors. Like, where do you stop when live players start coming off? Are we just going to let Phil Mickelson just jump straight back on if he wants to jump ship? It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it will be. And I think the other issue, the challenge that'll be for the PGA Tour is if they allow him straight back, is how many PGA Tour players are going to say, I might go sign for Liv for 1 or 2 years, get the big paycheck, knowing that I'm going to be able to come back anyway. I think the PGA Tour is going to pick and choose how they can get around that from a legal standpoint. I think will be interesting. Hudson Swafford, for example, has a 5-year ban from the PGA Tour for joining Liv. So I think that's going to be the great challenge. PGA Tour probably only really is interested in about 5 of those players coming back. Bryson, obviously. John Rahm, obviously. They would take Tyrrell Hatton in a heartbeat. Cameron Smith maybe is on the back end of that now. I'm not quite so sure. There's 1 or 2 others. Joaquin Niemann is clearly in that category. Everyone else, I think they could probably take or leave the PGA Tour. But does allowing Brooks back mean that there could potentially be another exodus going the other way back to Liv, knowing that the penalties that the PGA Tour are handing out are really only fairly arbitrary and you might be able to skirt your way around it regardless?
I also question, is Brooks playing good enough golf at the moment for them to warrant him coming back onto the PGA? He hasn't really done anything on the Liv Tour. I reckon the last time he won was 2022 on Liv.
Yeah, and he's been poor in the majors, so I think he was very good at the Masters in 2024, and then I reckon the subsequent 7 majors, I think he really hasn't been a factor. I think his best was a tie for 25th or something like that. So, and the other thing about him, Soph, is that he's never really been that bothered about the week-in, week-out tournament structure. He has always just treated them as a bit of a warm-up for what the next major is. Often he plays well in the lead-up, but you know that it doesn't mean that much to him. He's really only getting himself up for the big 4 majors. And because of his win in the PGA a couple of years ago, he still has an exemption for a period of time. But I think that will be a wonderful little tightrope that the PGA is going to have to walk, knowing that they'd like these guys back, but they don't want to see some of their other better players heading back out the other way. I thought it was interesting too. So if this weekend would normally be the Century, the old tournament of champions that's played at the Kapalua Plantation course in Hawaii, I reckon it's a great watch. Lots of elevation change, some beautiful scenes, ocean in the background, balls bouncing around all over the place. The course is traditionally pretty firm and fast. But the PGA Tour called it off because there were some challenges around the watering of that course 6 months ago, decided not to go there. And suddenly the biggest tournament of the week was Liv Promotions. That was a free kick to Liv, I thought.
Yeah, an absolutely free quick kick to Liv. And also, I'll give them a shout out. No Laying Up released a podcast last week all about Kapalua not being played. And it was very interesting. And it's worth our listeners, if they're into golf and a bit of golf nuts, to go over to that pod and have a listen to it, because it was an incredibly interesting decision. There's actually 2 courses over there. And the course, my understanding is, the course that was actually more damaged is not the course that they actually play the tournament on.
A lot of withdrawals from Liv Promotions, essentially because the PGA Tour said, even if you're not a member, you are getting a 1-year ban. So if you go and play that event and try and get on to Liv through the promotion series, only top 3 of essentially around about 75 in the field would get through. So they're Canada's Richard Lee, Sweden's Bjorn Hellegren, and Anthony Kim, the American, who had those 2 years as a wild card player. He gets back in. But everyone else is banned from the PGA Tour for a year. What did you make of that? Did you think that was reasonable of the PGA Tour to put such a blanket ban on everyone who signed up for that promotions tournament, including guys who don't currently have a card on the PGA Tour?
Well, I think in light of the fact that they're currently debating whether or not Brooks is allowed back onto the PGA Tour and it looks like they might be swinging in his favour, I think it's too harsh. There's people, like you said, there's people on there that don't have a PGA Tour card yet. Like, what actually was the point of doing a blanket ban? I don't think there really was one.
You know what? I understand what they're on about. And so if I could put it to you like this, this has always been one-way traffic. Liv takes players, pays them an inordinate amount of money to come away from the PGA Tour. PGA Tour's got to fight back somehow, don't they? I've always been fascinated by the pro-Liv people who think that the PGA Tour should make it as easy as possible for Liv to take their players and come back whenever they want and go back and play a PGA Tour event if they want to. If I'm the PGA Tour and I feel like Liv, you know, it might be one or two more players from being a thing of the past. So if Bryson and Rahm are gone, I think the whole event is done. And why wouldn't you be absolutely maniacal in your opposition to it? They're a competitor. They've been pilfering all of your players. I can understand. I think it is harsh and I think it's unreasonable, but I can also understand what they're on about because I reckon they can see the finish line with this. And if they can just, you know, saw down a couple more big branches off of the live tree, then that bite might be enough to kill it for good. And I reckon that's their mentality at the moment. And unfortunately, a few of the little guys who are signing up for these promotions events, a Travis Smythe or someone like that who got into the final day but missed the top 10 cut for the international series. Yeah, who knows? Is he a bit of collateral damage here? I reckon the PGA Tour are aware of that. So just to round that out, Matt Jones finished in the top 10 alongside Corey Crawford and Christopher Wood, all Australian. So they'll get exemptions into the international series events, which obviously we've seen Wade Ormsby win not so long ago. And Travis Smythe, who I was just talking about, he played the final 36 holes, but he finished in a tie for 14th, I think. So he will have to do it the hard way next year. Talking about Wade Ormsby, Soph. He takes out Blitz Golf at Cooyonga last Friday. Yet another trophy for the veteran.
Yeah, and a big one at that. It looked, I think someone described it as a Pokemon trophy, which I quite liked. It's massive. but what an exciting finish as well, birding that last hole with a massive putt. The crowds weren't even really contained. It didn't even look like they had any roping at Blitz Golf. It looked like you could really just be part of the tournament. It was unbelievable. No, very happy and very proud of Wade.
And I love that about Blitz. I've got some queries about Liv. I'll get to those. But first of all, I've got to say, no ropes is absolutely brilliant. I saw Jack Thompson hit a shot into 17. And then as he's trying to fill his divot, he got absolutely swamped by the crowd walking past him. And look, I understand you can't get away with that in big tournaments. But little events like this, where you want the crowd to feel a part of it. I mean, that is the great beauty of golf, is that you can be 2 yards from someone actually in full competition mode. I think it's amazing when clubs decide, not so much clubs, but tournament organisers decide to do away with ropes. I actually think you could do it at the Women's Australian Open this year. When the Women's Australian Open was here previously, it was LPGA Tour co-sanctioned, and I think you probably had to make sure the players had that little bit of extra security, but it's largely going to be Europeans and Australians this time around. I think you could, with some good marshalling, I think you could probably do that at the Women's Australian Open this year. That will be something that I would like to see anyway. Blitz, can I make this point? I feel like a Ukrainian watching Test cricket when I'm watching Blitz or trying to understand what is happening with Blitz. Why is it so difficult for them to actually put up a leaderboard or explain what's going on? I get frustrated with this. If you want me, and look, I mean, I've never had contact from Blitz. This is even back in the period when I was working at the Sunday Mail and the Advertiser and really the only person writing about golf. But you know what? If you want me to take you seriously, could you please take yourself seriously? I went onto the website. I spent 10 minutes trying to find a leaderboard. All I get is the name of the winner. There's no website explaining how we got to the fact that Wade Ormsby won it. I mean, I would love to have a bit of an understanding of how the competition plays out. I get that it's celebs versus pros, and there's a couple of people who ride in to enter, and they've all got handicaps, but that's fine. That's all a part of it. I mean, you can play in the Royal Adelaide competition against a 36 handicapper, and we can all see what's going on. Why can't Blitz do that? I do not understand why they're not prepared to see themselves as a legitimate sporting event by providing scores, for goodness sake. So look, either get into the mode of providing me scores, giving me a leaderboard and explaining how we got there, or you don't belong in the sports section. You belong in the entertainment section. It's great entertainment, no problem at all, but don't kid me that it's a sporting event if you're not going to tell me what the scores are.
I totally get what you're saying and I completely understand, but I don't know if they are striving to be a sporting event, are they? Like, it is entertainment. if you look at social media or your Instagram and you go down that explore page that you have, I've just been getting grabs and grabs of Travis Head, you know, holding the putt from out the back. And I don't think people really care about the score, if you want my opinion. I think it was, I mean, you've got celebrities playing professional athletes and they're celebrities who aren't in that sport. I don't think it's meant to be a serious sporting event.
Well, and I think that's for the lesser. I mean, this is an event that goes all around Australia and it has professional golfers playing professional golf. I think it could afford to take itself a little bit more seriously. And therefore, yes, maybe I'm not the generation or not the demographic that they're after. But if you take yourself a bit seriously, then I might take it a bit more seriously as well. And until they do, I just don't know that I'm ever going to embrace it like I will when the Women's Australian Open comes, or even, you know, some of the big amateur events that are going to turn up in Adelaide from time to time in the not too distant future. They're probably something that I'm going to lean towards because, yeah, I can understand there's fun and games and hijinks and we've got a couple of celebs and Travis is holding putts from all over the place and Glenn Maxwell's involved. Great. I love it. I'm absolutely thrilled with that. But give me a leaderboard, for goodness sake. Explain to me how the group that ends up in the final group ends up there. I don't understand it and I don't think it should be that complicated. Anyway, let's move on. Soph. Another one of your great mates. Yeah, I tell you what, there's a few of them on the list today. Reagan Denton takes out the Master of the Amateurs last week in an extraordinarily windy day at the Southern Golf Club. She's going to be inside the world top 50 in the amateur rankings when they come out late on Wednesday. So you're listening to this on Wednesday morning. By late today, I reckon she'll be in around about the mid-40s on the world rankings, which is just incredible. Tell us a little bit more about Reagan Denton.
Well, it was an unbelievable round. I think we spoke about it last week. It was actually televised, that final round on KO, but it was her second round. She shot a course record 7-under at the Southern Golf Club, which is just incredible. It's a difficult course. I've actually played in the Masters of the Am there myself, so I have played this course, and I was having a bit of PTSD as I was watching her quite easily battle this course because it didn't look that easy for me, but that's okay. But no, it was incredible. It's actually like the tale of two nines. The front nine is completely linksy golf and the second nine is tree lined. But on this final day, and I do send all my love to the Victorian bushfires that are going on at the moment, because this final day, it started gusting up to 67 k's an hour and it was 41 degrees. It was just disgusting conditions. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think if they'd been playing 2 hours later, they would have considered calling it off because it was that tough and that harsh. They couldn't clean the greens clear of any of the twigs or any of the leaves that were coming past. You could see the sand kicking out of the bunker. So Reagan finished her final round 2 over and finished 5-under with a 1-shot lead over the world amateur ranked number 9, Catherine Park from the US, which is just unbelievable. But the composure showed by Reagan, you couldn't tell at all from her emotions. I think it's the 13th hole. It's a tough par 4. And she's gone straight over the back. At this point in time, I think she was still holding a 1-shot lead, but it was a battle between Catherine and her throughout the entire round. She was in the pine needles. She's chipped it to about 18 foot and just held the putt. And there was no fist pump, nothing. It was just walking straight off to the next tee and let's get on to the next job. It was unbelievable. I loved watching her. She's an incredible golfer. And I can't wait to see what she does next. I hope it's part of that is playing pennant for me and maybe lifting up a Sanderson Cup, but that's a bit me being a bit selfish because I think she's going to be doing a lot more better things than that. I'm looking forward to seeing her play at the Vic Open next week, actually.
Yeah, I suspect she'll be in the Vic Open. I tell you what, Soph, she must be close. And I know we talked with her about this only 3 or 4 weeks ago when she did not know where it was at, but she's got to be a chance of that Augusta National Women's Amateur invite now, which is the week before the Masters at the famed course, Augusta National. She's the number one ranked Australian amateur. It's the top 30 who go through, but they do make exceptions to bring more nations in. I'd be surprised if she's not getting an invite now. She is traveling that well, and my goodness, who knows? She'll play the Women's Asia Pacific Amateur, which is in New Zealand in February. I'll be going across for that, interestingly enough. Looking forward to watching it. If she wins that, now that's a tall order because this is all of Asia Pacific. There's a lot of wonderful players out of Korea and Japan who'll be lining up for that event as well. But if she wins it, I think she gets into three majors throughout the year. So she'll be playing the Women's Open, the US Open, and I believe it is the Evian as well. So that's the sort of company we're talking about. So, yeah, if she's unavailable for your little pennant competition, mate, it might be because she's playing on the world stage in front of thousands of people. I hope you can cop that.
Surely not. Surely the pennant final takes precedent. No, I'm kidding. I think Reagan is going to do great things, and I can't wait to watch her more on the world stage because she's already on the world stage.
Yeah. Just very quickly, Caitlin Pierce, who we've already been talking about at the WebEx Series in Perth, played at Royal Fremantle. It was won by Connor McKinney, four-stroke winner, so he was dominant over Curtis Luck. Kirsten Rudgley, I beg your pardon, and Abby Teasdale were also in a tie for second. Caitlin Pierce finished T9 at 10 under, so another excellent round for her, Soph, another excellent week.
Yeah, another incredible week. Do you know what, Hookie? I reckon this week of golf was just go through Sophie's trauma because Royal Fremantle for me also had a lot of trauma. And so it was quite difficult watching for me, just watching these amazing golfers play some just outstanding golf. And I'm sitting back being like, yeah, I remember when I was in that bunker. Remember when I was in that water. Yep, remembering all of my trauma. This is great.
That's the one advantage of very rarely playing on courses that are on TV, because I don't have those horrendous memories of how I completely butchered every hole on the course on the way through. Let's just touch on the South Australian Junior Amateur. We've got the day one scores here. You're listening to this after the event has finished, so this is a little bit out of date. We're recording this on Monday night, and you'll be listening to it on Wednesday. World Under Kuyonga, who hosted Blitz Golf on Friday, and now they're hosting the Junior Amateur on day one and day two of this event, Monday and Tuesday. And then, of course, they've got the Women's Australian Open coming up in just a couple of weeks, Soph. So they are sharing their course wonderfully, the Kuyonga members. We appreciate it on behalf of everyone who's involved in these events. Another one of your mates, Katie Soule, has the day one lead. Now, she's listed as Cottesloe Golf Club, but she is quite the story, Soph.
Yeah, Katie Soule is she's awesome. I love Katie. I've known her since she was about 7 or 8, and she was skipping down fairways. I don't know if she's still skipping down fairways. I secretly hope that she still is, but she has so much composure for her age. I think she'd be 14 now, but she used to be a Royal Adelaide member and headed off to Perth only recently to further her golf and reach out to some coaches over there. And look, I'm fingers crossed for her because I really do love Katie. She's a great girl. Her golfing knowledge at the age of 10, I will never forget it. She got us into a final, and asking her how she played it, it was just so straight down the line. It was just, I hit fairway, I hit green, and then I hope for a one putt, but a two putt might do it. And I thought, that's perfect. That's as simple as it is, Ben.
Why do we make it? What are we doing talking about this sport for 40 minutes? We should just get Katie in to give us a 5-minute rundown of how to play the game. End of podcast. Thanks very much. See you next week.
Yeah, 100%. She simplifies it to a T. She should be doing Sophie's practice hack. It should be Katie's practice hack.
Very good. Yeah, so she's in a tie for the lead with Jessica Zhu from the Victoria Golf Club. And the boys, Troy Storm from Singapore, was taking a one-shot lead into round two ahead of Declan Pereira and Albert Kim, with Ollie Marsh also in a tie for third. So that'll play out at Kuyonga tomorrow. They take a day off on Wednesday. Thursday and Friday will be the Junior Masters at the Royal Adelaide Golf Club. And, of course, by the end of the week, it's the Australian Junior Amateur as well, which is played back over in Western Australia. So plenty of golf on at the moment in the summer school holidays for the kids. So, our course in focus this week is the West Lakes Golf Club. Fantastic little club, fantastic little course. I'm interested in your thoughts on it as someone who has played it regularly. I used to play it quite a lot. I must admit, I reckon it's been maybe 18 months since I've been there, but I'm excited to break it down with you. I've had the opportunity to speak to one or two of their members over the course of the last 24 hours, as I said. Let's just talk a bit about the history of the course. It was established as Riverside Golf Club in 1951, but actually has its origins in Woodville Gardens dating back to the mid-1930s. So I think in about 1934, land was becoming increasingly precious. And so the Woodville Gardens Golf Club moved out to the site that they're currently on now, which is kind of on the eastern side of the lake at West Lakes. That was in 1951. I think it took the volunteers and the club officials around about a year to get a course up and running. And it changed its name. So 1951, interestingly enough, makes it 75 years old this year. So I imagine there'll be some celebrations for West Lakes at some point. It was Riverside, as I said. It changed its name to West Lakes Golf Club in 2011. It's a really tight, compact parcel of land. So it has Frederick Road to the east, and then it's surrounded by a meandering road called Lockside Drive. And there's a lot of little cul-de-sacs off of Lockside Drive where people sort of live with their houses backing onto the golf course. And that's where the entry of the course is, sort of over on the southwestern corner, if you like. It's 1 kilometre north of the Grange Golf Club, 3 kilometres north of the Royal Adelaide Golf Club. So it puts it right in the heart of that sand belt region. Certainly a small parcel of land compared to the nearby tier ones, and it's a very, very flat golf course, if you like, but it is wonderful, excellent sandy soil for golf. Their CEO is a guy called Paul Curtis. I know Paul well. He's been a long-standing CEO of West Lakes Golf Club. He almost certainly dates back before the West Lakes era. He dates back right into the Riverside era, so he's a real asset to golf at West Lakes and golf in the state. A lovely, amicable, quietly spoken bloke. Their president is Paul Burke. Catherine is Catherine Agnos. You'll appreciate this, Soph. There's only six on the board plus the CEO. Those six on the board, three women, three men. So a real egalitarian club setup. Their original clubhouse was a rail car caboose. So could you imagine that? Going and playing your 18 holes of golf and then climbing up the stairs into the rail car caboose for a couple of drinks. Of course, that wasn't suitable for a glowing club, but had a lot of sentimental value and was quite the emotional issue when the club opted to build the new clubhouse, the origins of which we can now see today. It's built into a quite impressive single structure. It features offices, change rooms, wet areas, and a bar and a separate dining room. So it's a great setup for functions and club events. Lovely big glass windows overlooking the 9th green and the 10th tee, which is absolutely spectacular. There is one tragic historical note to all of this, Soph. In 2002, during a women's lunch, the roof of the dining room collapsed. Two members of the golf club were killed and another eight were injured. I'd only just joined the MFS at the time, probably about 6-8 months before. So I remember this quite vividly. It was absolutely harrowing. There was an inquest that followed it up. But that was a real tragedy and a massive challenge for the golf club to overcome, as you can possibly imagine. On Course Golf runs the pro shop. So that's, if you like, an external retail outlet. They've become quite popular amongst tier two clubs. So Victor Harbour, Blackwood, Tanunda, Barmera, Aston Hills, Thaxted Park are all part of the On Course Golf brand. Chris Holiday is the manager there. And Stuart Gillespie is the superintendent. $60 a round with a member, $90 a round as a visitor. Generally, you can only get afternoon tea times if you're a visitor. But, you know, you think about that for the pricing for being able to play golf on the sandbelt, Soph. It is absolutely value for money, and they do actually market themselves as the best value golf in the western suburbs. So that's my little roundup on it. I'm going to lean into you now to start telling me what you think about the golf course. As I said, very flat part of the land. Is there something that, you know, stands out to you that you really like about West Lakes Golf Club whenever you turn up?
Well, again, we're just going on a podcast today of traumas. I've never actually played well at West Lakes, unfortunately. But that's not the course's fault. That's purely my fault. Like you said, it's a small property, but their bunkering is so clever, and that's what they've really done to make it difficult. There's so much bunkering off the tee that you have to really think about, am I laying up? Am I taking it on? And then I can't actually think of a green that doesn't have bunkering around it. I think there's one green. But every other green has bunkering around it, and it makes it so difficult. They're quite small greens, challenging, often a lot of two tiers. It's really also their par fives I find really, really interesting, really challenging. A lot of layup options, but a lot of go for it options. And if you go for it and you miss that green, it's a pretty tricky up and down. You might actually be staring double down the barrel rather than birdie. So, look, I love West Lakes. I think they've done an amazing job with the property that they have. I do have a little story for you, though, that I can't not think about when I play West Lakes. So West Lakes have a Varden. I reckon it's played normally, traditionally, around April, May. That might be different now. I was playing with a couple of girls that I won't name because don't want them to get embarrassed by this story. But like you said, a lot of houses back on to West Lakes.
Yep.
So I won't tell you what hole because, again, I don't want to embarrass anyone who was part of this story, but I will never forget putting on one of these greens, and one of the bedrooms must have left their window open and some of the adults were having some extracurricular activities and we could hear absolutely everything. But we all three of us birdied that hole because we couldn't stop laughing and couldn't believe some of the stamina that was happening across the road from us. And so that's what I always think when I think of Westlake sometimes. Apart from their clever bunkering, I also can't not think of that story. And it's funny, as those two girls, whenever I catch up with them, it's the first thing we start talking about as well.
Well, it has to be early in the round, Soph, because 2, 3, 4, 5 are the ones that seem to back on to most of the residences. I suspect it was early in the round. So nice to be able to enjoy someone else's pleasure, if you like, and make a birdie along the way. Can't complain.
100%. It only went downhill from there, unfortunately. So I should have asked them to be a bit louder so I could hear them on the rest of the holes.
I tell you what I love, and you talked about the bunkering. I reckon there are 4 or 5 holes where there are really clever bunkers well short of the green that look like they're really in play, but they're probably actually not. They do it on 1, they do it on 4, they do it on 7, and they do it on 18 as well, I think, was what I had in my notes here. I remember I spent a bit of time looking through the course and the website today. The other thing about the bunkers is there's always generally a miss. So it's heavily bunkered on one side, but generally you've got a bailout on the other side. So 2, there's a lot of bunkers on the right, not many on the left. 3, there's a lot of bunkers on the – now I've got to think about this. I think left, not many on the right. 7 is bunkered on one side, not the other. 8's bunkered on one side, not the other. 10, all the bunkers are on the right, not the left. 11, I think, is the same. All the bunkers are on the right, not the left. 16 has the bunkers on the right and not the left. 17 bunkers are on the right, not the left. Anyway, you understand what I'm saying. I reckon for a course like West Lakes, where you've got probably a lot of people who are relatively new to the game, the fact that you've got an opportunity to hit it to one side of the green and stay out of the sand, which can be pretty penal at a course like that, is something that I admire in the way it's been set up.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's hole 13. It's a par 5. That's my favourite my favorite hole down at West Lakes. There's bunkers off the tee, but from memory, it's like you said, depth perception. They look like they're in play, but they're not. And then your next second shot, like I said, you can take on that green. It's got bunkering around it, but it does, like you said, have a spot for people to be able to bail out and they could putt up towards that green. But the layup itself is also very challenging because of that depth perception with a couple of bunkers just hanging around. You don't quite know where's the best spot to put it. It's really clever. And it's not until you actually get to the green, look back, and you realize that's where I should have put my ball.
Yeah, which is the beauty of clever design in a golf course. And they do need clever design for a place like West Lakes that does have those challenges around space and trying to fit 18 holes into that very narrow little package. So for me, their best holes are 4, 5, 16, 17, and 18. And I think it's no surprise that they are the most recently redeveloped holes overseen by our great mate, Neil Crafter, who has got his fingerprints all over this place. And I know that there are some other plans in place that I will talk about very shortly. What I think he has done magnificently. So if you think about that run of holes that I think is 4 and 5, and then it comes back the other way where it's 7, then I think it's 11, then I think it's 13, then I think it's 12, then I reckon it's 9, then it's 1. May not have all of those right, but they're all holes that run up and back and they run east-west. There is a little bit of a sameness to them, but what I think Neil did extremely well with 4 and 5 bound onto 7 is he's got this beautiful mounding all the way between the holes that really define the holes beautifully. He's done the same thing with 17 and 18, which are two excellent finishing holes. It does drop off a little bit the further south you go with those east-west holes, and they do become a little bit the same. There's sort of a lot of 350-meter par fours, you know, and I'd love to be able to see them broken up a bit or just given a bit more definition in their own right, and that's probably something that might be on the long-term plan for them. But I do think what Neil Crafter has done with 4, 5, 16, 17, and 18 are exceptional. I think he's also recently done some work on 2 with the approach to the green and the green itself. So is there – you look around this course, are there issues that you think, oh, look, if they had – a spare couple of hundred grand lying around, wouldn't that just be amazing, that they should maybe be thinking about? Is there areas of the golf course that you would like to see improved?
Well, I think the only thing that I would say is, and obviously I've played a lot of Vardens there, so I'm dealing with a lot of boys that are big hitters. Mm. Sometimes the greens are actually better approached from opposite fairways. So you most of your time hearing 4. So that's probably my only critique. If there is a way that they could somehow restrict people from being able to do that. Like I know at Glenelg, they make one of the par fours OB to hit your tee shot out there. It does just become a little bit dangerous.
Your point's well made about holes sort of 7, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 9. They all run parallel and there's not a lot of rough between the two. And the point I was making about what Crafter has done is built this beautiful mounding, which does delineate the holes a lot nicer. And also, at least if you're hitting from the wrong fairway, you've got a blind shot because you've got a big mound in front of you.
Yeah, at least, but you still shorten the hole if you do it. So
can do, yeah.
Yeah, it can do.
And it does, yeah, allow big hitters just to wail away and hit it anywhere. I do think that I wonder if one or two of those holes are a bit, they're very narrow, but then there's fairway bunkers as well. I wonder if that's too much, whether maybe some of those, whether you could open out by some mounding but take away the fairway. Oh, look, I don't know. It's again, it's probably not the thing that I think would be high on the priority list, but I just feel like sometimes those holes are a little bit the same. What Craft has done with a couple of them is excellent, and if they ever found the funding to do it, I'd love to see them do a few more of those. There is something that I will mention, Soph, that I only stumbled across because I was looking at the website a couple of days ago. And I did speak to a mate about it this week. I won't name my mate. I'm sure he's going to listen. He was very, very, he was wonderful the way he shared the information with me. He's fiercely passionate about this golf club, absolutely loves it. But I did ask him about what they have referred to as their transformation program, which began in 2021. And it was a 4-year program designed to, well, transform the course as by the name. So they were planning to do a stone wall entrance to the car park. There was a major bunker enhancement program, a tee furnishing program, and an improvement of the tee blocks themselves. There was major works planned for holes 9, 14, and 15, which included a big new pond, sort of short right of the 9th green. Fair to say that not all of that work has happened. There was a bit of frustration from members around that maybe 2 or 3 years ago because it did get behind. But this was on the basis of a member call, Soph. So all members were asked to pay $200 a year for 4 years. So $800, I don't know, that probably raised around about $500,000. And you can imagine trying to budget for a stone wall and an entrance gate, what that was worth then and what that was worth now is two completely different things. And I believe that's been shelved. The major works to 9, 14 and 15, which included this pond, I do believe has also been, is sort of on a permanent delay at the moment. So I think there was a bit of frustration a few years ago where people felt like they'd paid their money and hadn't got what they had been promised. But I am told the bunker enhancement program has been excellent. They've got concrete paths most of the way through the course. Now, it's not my taste, concrete paths, but when you've got a small parcel of land with high traffic and people are walking in exactly the same spot all the time, to be able to put those aggregated concrete paths in, I can understand that. I think that makes sense. And my mate was telling me the tee blocks now at that golf course are absolutely sensational. They've been broadened out. So in particular with the amount of par threes there, one day the tee could be right forward and you're hitting a wedge. The next day the tee could be right back and you're hitting a hybrid or something like that into the same green, which I think is an excellent way of creating variety around a short course.
Yeah, that's very cool. That's really good to hear, actually. I think West Lakes is a beautiful course. It's got a beautiful membership base. Like you said, it's a lot of people who are starting to play golf, yep, which I think inherently means they all kind of get around each other, and they're the kind of golfers that you play around and you always go into the clubhouse and you have a drink and you sit down and you chat and you talk, and it's a really amazing learning environment, and I actually really enjoy West Lakes. I've never played well there, unfortunately, but I've always enjoyed my experience. I've always enjoyed when I've come back into the clubhouse, and even after a bad round of golf, which is not often the case, I can look back and still think I had a good day.
Yeah, well said, Soph, and I think your point about the membership is excellent. They are very, very fiercely proud of their course. They are in a wonderful location. As we said, it's not a tier one course, and it's in amongst the tier one neighbourhood. So I do think they're very proud of what they've achieved there. They do it on an absolute shoestring. Membership there is under $3,000 a year. So when you compare that to the tier ones, which are, I think pretty much all of them are over $6,000 now, you are getting excellent value for your money as a member. And as I said, $60 to play a member guest round, $90 to front up there and play on your own. It's incredibly good value for a very, very good golf course that has been created by the bare hands of the members themselves across the journey. So it's a really special little place.
100%.
So if that normally wraps us up with one more thing to come, and that is Sophie's practice hack. Have you got anything for me this week?
Well, I have a practice hack for you, which I hope you use on Friday. Because last time I played with you, there was a bit of profanity coming out of your mouth and a bit of negativity that was
really happening.
There was. Wallace, I think, can actually jump in here and say it's exactly what happened. After every single bad shot, there was a bit of a monologue as to what Hooky had done, a bit of a grumble, and we all had to listen to it. So my practice hack today is quite clearly just to keep staying positive on that golf course. It does really rub off on your game, and I'm hoping Hooky might be able to listen to this and we might be able to have some positivity coming into Glenelg, and Hooked on Sport might be able to lift up a trophy.
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to need some support from the captain. The team captain better be encouraging me the whole way through. Otherwise, if I play poorly, it'll be your responsibility.
Yeah, fair enough. Just chuck it all straight back onto the captain.
So while we're chasing glory at Glenelg Golf Club, there'll be plenty chasing probably not quite the same standard of glory at the Vic Open, which has become a wonderful tournament. Probably has lost a little bit of its sheen in recent years, but it's down at 13th Beach. It's going to be another wonderful event.
100%. After our win on Friday, I'm looking forward to sitting on the couch and watching some amazing golf at 13th Beach. For the women's, we've got Sue O returning, who's defending champ, but that trophy has been lifted by the likes of like Celine Boutier, Minji Lee, Hannah Green. And I'm looking forward to some of our girls like Hannah Reeves, who's had an incredible start to her professional career, and Abby Teasdale, who only last week finished minus 14 at the WebEx Series with a T2, as well as Kirsten Rudgley, and as well as Caitlin Pearce, of course. And with the men's as well down at 13th Beach, it always gets windy down there. Those courses are completely linksy. You are going to see some creativity, some amazing short game, but incredible shot shaping as well. So look, I'm looking forward to looking at the Vic Open and having a bit of a yarn to you afterwards as well.
Yeah, I hope that it's not you sitting on the couch watching it. I hope you're sitting alongside me in the Glenelg Golf Club clubhouse drinking our winner's alcohol out of the trophy.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Maybe we'll watch the TVs at Glenelg Golf Club with a couple of vinos. We're pretty good at the couple of vinos bit. I don't know if we're good at lifting the trophy.
Well, we're going to have to find out one way or another. Wallace, Sophie, we'll see you on Friday. Looking forward to catching up with Rob Vincikovic at the Glenelg Golf Club. Great chat, as always. Loved your thoughts on West Lakes. See you on Friday, guys.
Thanks, guys.
See you then.
With the last putt sunk, that's a wrap on this golf edition of Hooked on Sport. Thanks for listening. Help us meet more golfers just like you by following us and leaving a review. We look forward to your company on the next golf edition of Hooked on Sport.